The future of reporting now.
This is Concordia News Radio.
Good morning. It's currently 10 degrees and sunny in Montreal. I'm Gabriele Zambito, and here are today's headlines. Montreal pharmacies have begun administering COVID-19 vaccines as the age of eligibility is reduced to 60 years old. Yesterday, thousands of people gathered in Montreal in protest to stop Asian hate. High real estate prices are driving Ottawans out of the city and into neighboring city of Gatineau. The latest COVID-19 numbers have just been released by the Quebec government. The province has now lost over 10,600 lives over the course of the pandemic. In the past 24 hours, there have been 3 new deaths and 712 new cases that were confirmed. That brings the total number of cases to just over 303,000. Over 21,000 people were also vaccinated, bringing the total to over 960,000 vaccinated Quebecers. As of today, Montrealers aged 60 and over can get their COVID-19 vaccination. The age to get a vaccine in other regions of Quebec remains at 65 years and over. This change comes at the same time that pharmacies will begin to administer vaccines to Montrealers. Around 350 pharmacies across Montreal are taking part in this vaccination program. And for many, a pharmacy may be more convenient and more accessible as opposed to the mass vaccination centers that are located in Montreal. We now go to Rwanda. For a week now, movement has been restricted in certain regions of the country. Our reporter, Michelle Malnasi, has more.
As of last Monday, movement from Bukesera, Nyanza, Gisagara to other districts has been prohibited. Restrictions in the other 27 districts have eased up, leaving Bukesera community members like Peter Boniava feeling isolated. He says that he usually goes to see his family regularly, but since they live in Kigali, he hasn't been able to visit them.
C'est pas juste, parce que nous on doit travailler.
Boniava finds the government's decision unfair as it makes him doing his job more difficult. The closure of Bukesera has also impacted his personal life. He has a dog at home who is sick and the closest vet to him is in Kigali. It makes it more difficult for him to care for his pet. He says that he as well as other community members are frustrated. The decision from the government was made abruptly, leaving them little to no time to prepare. The hope is that within the near future, the government will reopen the entirety of the country so that Boniava can continue his regular family visits. Michelle Malnasi, Concordia News, Bukesera.
Students and staff of several high schools and elementary schools in Montreal will be spending some time at home while the schools remain closed. These closures are a result of recent cases of COVID-19 making their way into certain classes. Last Friday, John F. Kennedy High School joined Michelangelo Elementary, Mind High School, and Lester B. Pearson High School in closing their doors. Santé Publique and the English Montreal School Board are strongly recommending that students and their families who have been in contact with the infected classrooms get tested. While students and their families self-isolate, online studies will continue until their school will resume in person. Ottawa's housing market is becoming so competitive that home buyers are engaging in bidding wars. Since real estate prices skyrocketed in the past year, some Ottawans are looking to move to provinces near Ottawa in the neighboring city of Gatineau. Our reporter Bogdan Litvinenko has more. Hi Bogdan, can you tell us more about the current state of Ottawa's housing market?
Hello Gabriele. So the real estate market in Ottawa is as competitive as it's ever been. There's been a 27% increase in the average home prices since March 2020, and that's well above the national average of 16%. So now the average home price in Ottawa stands at $718,000. Now we're also seeing a construction boom in the capital. We've got lots of new high-rises and apartment buildings that are 20, 30, or even 40 stories high, which is quite rare for the city. And so the skyline is evolving, it's growing and changing as we speak. But even then, the supply is still unable to meet the demand. So Ottawans are having a hard time when it comes to purchasing a house.
So what is the biggest challenge for potential home buyers right now?
Now, the hardest part is to offer a very high sum for beating the competition. You need to offer the highest bid above asking price so that you can guarantee the sale. For example, on Friday, an Ottawa couple bid $400,000 to purchase their dream home in the suburbs, yet they still lost the bid. So now the challenge is no longer about matching the asking price and having the appropriate budget. It goes far beyond that. Earlier today, I spoke with Olivia Konishevsky. She's a public servant who wants to buy a house in the Ottawa area for her family. And this is what she had to say.
It's definitely a challenge to buy a house in Ottawa these days. For example, my husband and I offered $20,000 over the asking price, and someone still outbid us. We're still in a pandemic environment, yet these prices are just simply skyrocketing. Personally, I don't want to pay $900K for a semi-detached home. This isn't Toronto, after all. So I'd rather have a longer commute and buy a house on the Quebec side, even though I might experience a language barrier.
Now, why are Ottawans considering Gatineau as the next best option?
So they're considering Gatineau because in the city, the average home price is $400,000 lower than on the Ontario side. And this location is pretty convenient. Even though it's located in Quebec, it's right across the river from downtown Ottawa. So for many residents in the capital region, it would still be a pretty smooth commute. Now, many Ottawans are still hesitant when it comes to buying a house in Gatineau because an important factor to consider is the cultural difference between the two provinces and, of course, the language barrier. Now, for English speakers who make up the majority of Ottawa, this could be a deal breaker. So now it becomes more of a personal decision whether such a change in the environment and having a new lifestyle in a Francophone city is worth the price difference.
Thanks for the update, Bogdan.
Thank you, Gabriele.
That was our reporter, Bogdan Litvinenko. Last Friday, a large crowd gathered near the McGill campus on Park Avenue before taking to the streets of Montreal to protest for climate and social justice. Our reporter, Evan Lindsay, was there and brings us this report.
The event comes almost exactly 2 years after the first global climate protest in 2019, where 150,000 people came together in Montreal to strike for climate reform. What makes Friday's protest different is the large collection of groups who attended and hosted the event. Some of the hosts included Extinction Rebellion, Youth of Quebec, Solidarity Across Borders, Climate Justice Montreal, and the Racial Justice Collective.
Recently, this organization has also acknowledged that, you know, like, this is intersectional and that we should also work with, like, social justice and feminism, and also this particular protest is also organized with the Defunding the Police and, like, the Racial Justice Collective and immigration justice, so they just tried to, like, encompass everything in a climate strike because, you know, we've realized that this impacts everyone, not just the environment and the future.
That was Orania Nina, a volunteer helping guide the crowd as they marched down Park Avenue. The large crowd united all these organizations with a common goal, which some simply describe as a fight against capitalism.
Why I'm here today, to try to convey the message that capitalism is like going too far, and the fact that capitalism exists is going to ruin everything, the first the nature and then us, the humans.
That was Nicholas Strove, a participant at last Friday's protest. The protesters had big goals. On the event's Facebook page, they detailed demands for carbon neutrality by 2030, the regularization of all migrants and refugees in Canada and Quebec, the recognition and promotion of the full ancestral sovereignty of First Peoples, as well as the defunding, demilitarization, and decolonialization of all police forces. For Concordia News Montreal, I'm Evan Lindsay.
It's been nearly a week since the shooting in Georgia targeting the Asian community. 8 people were killed, 6 of whom were Asian Americans. Since the coronavirus, hate crimes against Asian Americans have spiked. Worldwide, protests in support of the Asian community have erupted, including one in Montreal yesterday. After attending the protest, Sarah Seagram spoke with our reporter Juliet Palin to tell us about her experiences as a woman of Asian descent in Canada.
My name is Sarah Seagram, and I'm a second-year student at Concordia. I am studying psychology, and I am, my ethnicity is I'm half Korean and half white. I have experienced some racism and, you know, some xenophobia and all that sexism and all that stuff combined. I am half white, so it really depends. Like, some people don't even notice the half Asian in me, and some people, it's all they notice. It really depends on the person, which is kind of strange saying. I feel like my connection mostly to what's going on right now, like all the Asian violence, is purely through the connection through the Korean side of my family, who I'm very, very close with. My grandparents on that side are like my best friends. They're like the most amazing people to me. And it blows my mind how when I see all these elderly Asian people get attacked, it's like to think of my grandparents in that position and how like sweet and gentle they are. And probably like these elderly people that are getting attacked are probably just as sweet, just as kind, just as gentle and amazing people. But yet all people see is their race. And I think that's just so stupid. My mom is Korean. My dad is white. My mom has experienced actually quite a bit of harassment in the past couple months, which is breaking my heart, absolutely. She got called a chink, and some man called at her, yelled at her out the window of a car when she was walking with her boyfriend. It's weird because, you know, my mom has been in Canada since she was born. You know, she was born in Canada. She's a Canadian. You know, she does speak Korean, but, like, her first language is English. She went to U of T. She's grown up in Canada. You know what I mean? She's a very basic Canadian family. And it's just like the same as me. It's like she feels like there's nothing different about her. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing different between me, her, and everybody else that's working in Canada and grown up in Canada. So I think for her, like what she expressed to you, which is kind of like the shock and how she never really placed herself in that area of like the races that people discriminated against. She never considered herself necessarily in that category because it was just so not relevant to her until now. Because it was never really, like, brought to her attention, like, oh, you're very different because of your race until now, until people are deciding, like, this virus comes from you. Even though we're Korean and not even Chinese, it doesn't really make a difference. It just shows, like, there's no logic behind it. You know what I mean? It just purely comes from an excuse to give hatred to people. Yesterday, actually, there was our anti-mask protest, and it was anti-masking kind of just, like, anti-virus in general. And I remember kind of walking by a lot of people, men especially, like white men, in this anti-mask rally on Saint-Laurent, and I felt a lot of eyes on me, more than usual. But specifically, I felt like the Asian side of me was really visible. And that was honestly really scary. Like, the first thing I did was put my sunglasses on, because I felt like the first thing that people are going to notice about me, if I was Asian or not, is my eyes. But walking by that rally yesterday, I just felt very vulnerable in that position, you know, being a female and also, like, being Korean in this time.
That was Sarah Seagram speaking with our reporter, Juliet Palin. YouTube comedy creator David Dobrik has found himself in the midst of some heavy allegations. Amanda DeFeo is here with more. Good morning, Amanda. Could you tell us more about the situation surrounding Dobrik?
Morning, Gabrielle. For sure. I mean, 24-year-old YouTube star David Dobrik has lost sponsors, subscribers, and has even stepped down from his own company. The creator started receiving heavy backlash weeks back when Xbox Squad member Seth Francois said he was sexually assaulted for one of Dobrik's videos a while back. In said video, Seth a seemingly trick than to kissing now 47-year-old Block Squad member Jason Nash, which Seth never consented to. A couple of weeks after the story, Kat Tembarge, publishes an insider article with no allegations.
What do you mean by this?
In the article, a woman only referred to as Hannah accuses ex-Volk Squad member known as Dirty Dom of sexual assault during a filming for one of Dobrik's blogs in 2018. She told Insider that Dom allegedly had sex with her while she was too drunk to consent. After the publication of this article, Dobrik lost big business like that of Spark Capital, which was a major part of Dispo, which is the company and name of Dobrik's photo sharing app. In light of the situation, Dobrik has announced that he would be leaving the company as of last week. Dobrik had also lost approximately 100,000 subscribers.
Has Dobrik addressed anything?
Yes. The night of the publication, Dobrik posted a video where he seems to vaguely address allegations. He claims to have distanced himself from friends like Dom because he doesn't align with all of the actions, which is a pretty vague response. However, he did directly address an apology towards Seth.
All right. Thank you very much, Amanda. That was our reporter, Amanda DeFeo. There's a new restaurant in Laval that has no sign, no advertisement, and no store of its own. But it's become a viral TikTok trend, and people have been lining up to eat at Cali MTL. Only people who have heard of the food would know about the restaurant. Here is Nicole Alexakis with the story.
Thousands of restaurant reviews on TikTok have served as free publicity for Cali MTL. Most people film their experience, driving there, waiting in the long line, ordering, waiting for their food in their car, and then taste testing and rating the food out of 10. These videos have reached thousands of people. Every night there's a lineup down the block. Sam L. Mashtub is part of the management team at Cali MTL. He says that because of the recognition they gained from TikTok, they serve nearly 1,500 people a night. At the moment, Cali MTL doesn't have its own restaurant. The food is sold exclusively through Manti Bistro, but according to El Mashtub, a Cali MTL location will be opening up within the next few weeks.
We opened it during COVID to see how it would turn out, and it completely blew off. And it always was planned to have its own location, but for COVID, we didn't know how it would how it would work at first, but right away after a couple of weeks, we knew it had to have its own location. So it's been in the works. There's going to be a food truck. There's going to be several locations as well.
Customer Adam Babalis says he heard of the restaurant through TikTok. He says he's been twice so far, and both times he had to wait over an hour to get his food.
My only issue is that you have to come when you're with friends, because otherwise you're waiting by yourself for an excruciating long time. So it's like you come with your friends, you chill in the car, you wait till your food comes, and it's not as bad. But if I was to come here alone, it wouldn't be worth my trip. But the food is really good.
According to Babalus, the mac and cheese and the fried chicken burger with Cali MTL special sauce is a must try. He gave the restaurant an overall 8 out of 10. In case you were wondering, I tried out the food as well. While I do agree with Adam that the long line and wait time is hard to do alone, the food wasn't worth an hour and a half wait. My overall rating is a 6 out of 10 because I did enjoy the vanilla milkshake. For Concordia News, I'm Nicole Alexakis.
That's your news to 1148. Thanks for listening. For Concordia News, I'm Gabriele Zambito.